Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We have a fascinating program, a wonderful program. We're going to get to our guest. First, I have to turn to you, our listeners, and ask you a favor. Please feel confident, feel comfortable in contacting us. If you have a topic or an area you would like us to cover, provide some programming on a particular concern of yours, let us know. We'd be happy to try to do that for you. I'd like you to give you two opportunities, two pathways to reach us. First, good old-fashioned mail to put a stamp on a letter. If you'd like to do it that way, please address it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. Now, the zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. If you would rather email us while you're on the computer, please feel free to do so at clemons10@aol.com. That's CLEMONS, the number 10, at AOL.com. While you're on the computer, I invite you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. And you could find that at this website, spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. And now that little bit of business is done. First off, my co-host, Dorothy Rear, could not be with us today. But thank goodness, my guest certainly could be. And we'd like to welcome Peter Philip with us today. Peter, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you here and to continue our discussions on the area that we've done a number of programs on with other survivors of the survivors of clergy sexual abuse. What's happening now? What's going on in our dioceses, and especially here at the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut. But again, we'd like to again extend a welcome. You have a long history involved in teaching, as well as, and I found that fascinating, being the director of a AIDS hospice.
Yes.
What years did that take place?
91, 92, 90.
Yeah, we're right in the 90s, yeah. Somewhere around.
Yes. Yeah, the AIDS epidemic came to us in about 84.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I did a little coursework. You know, it's nobody thought we were going to have AIDS long enough that people would have careers around it.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They'd get a cure and they'd be gone. And that's what that has in common with what Aaron Neal does. Because who ever thought, when this all started breaking, that we'd have diocesan offices dedicated to this topic. Somehow, I think people thought it would go away, that we caught all the people that were bad, got rid of them, and we'd move along. Unfortunately, one of the difficulties, the crisis in the Catholic Church has caused us to make changes in the way we do business. In the past, you wanted to go to the movies with the youth group.
Mm-hmm.
You just went.
Yeah.
Nobody cared.
Yeah.
In fact, everybody thought you were a great guy and doing a good thing. Today, if you hop in the car with the youth group to go to the movies, Aaron Neal is having palpitations.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have this office for prevention, and people have to go through a process in order to be able to deal with our young people.
Now, exactly who goes through this process? It's called Virtus.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's going to be involved with kids. So, for instance, if you are having a new roof installed on your school, Aaron goes to the company of the roofers and explains to them the do's and don'ts of working within the Catholic Church in Bridgeport. For instance, you're not to be talking to the kids. You're not to use the same bathrooms the kids use, and on in that area, in those areas, so that people understand we are trying to protect the kids. Now, a lot of these people have kids of their own, and they appreciate it, you know, and it doesn't, you know, you have to go to the bathroom, so you just run in, you don't even think.
Yeah, of course.
Right, you know, but you can't do it. So the people are still coming forward, we know, not with the regularity they were, but we still know abuse is going on. But we also know that abuse is being prevented, because all of these people who are working with young people all know now what to look for. In the past, I went to school in 1955. When I was in school, they said, well, you know, it was a different time. People didn't look for those things. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you and I know there was abuse in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when it came out, lots of the abuse had taken place at that time. And we just didn't know. We didn't have the vocabulary. We weren't open about sexuality. Parents didn't talk to kids about it. And so when things happened, kids didn't know what to do. Today, kids and adults know what to do. And so that extra step of preparing people to work with our children is painful to some people, mm-hmm. to some parishes. They don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. They have to. As far as I know, and I hope, it'll go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
The church, though a religious institution, is still very much a human institution, and we have our share of people who make mistakes, do bad things. Not only clergy, people that work in the parishes. You know, you can't pick up the newspaper today without seeing some kind of sexual abuse.
Mm.
In fact, our group, Peggy, Jim, Aaron, myself, Patrick Turner, we've made a decision that we don't only want to invite clergy victims, but rather anybody who's been abused, anybody who's looking for a place to be accepted, anybody who can come into a room and be comfortable telling the story, what happened to you. And that's all. You only have to tell it once. Mm-hmm. And to begin, and you know, if you ever, when you were a child, for instance, told a lie, it didn't feel right to you, it made it right. And that's when you tell your story, it's out, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, AA has used that model forever and ever and ever. So we think in Bridgeport that we are interested in stopping all sexual abuse. So what do? It's not easy. It's not always easy to get people to help us. But I'll tell you that the people that work in the Catholic Center are very interested in this topic, and they can't do enough to be helpful. I just have so much respect for those people. Brian Wallace in the communications office, you know, all the work he's done with us to get the news out there that we're trying to do this. And so we need to let people know that there's a time and a place for everything for them to show up. So we have some meetings scheduled. And there's no time, there's no agenda. I'll be there, you'll be there, whoever. And we'll sit and you come and you talk. You want to talk about your story, you want to talk about the weather, whatever it is. We just want you to have a place where you can sit down with like-minded people. Bishop Frank, when he had us at Fairfield, I don't know if that talking was his idea, but whoever had the idea, it was the best one you could have. At the end of the evening, we were wrung out.
Mm.
We didn't talk anymore. We all just went home.
Yeah.
But we had to have that.
Mm.
Definitely had to have it. Mm. And if the parishes are upset that they have to go through this process, well, there's not really much I can say about that. We just do not want to go back to 1955 when we said we didn't know. So,
or the response of Bishop may simply say, transfer the person somewhere else.
Correct.
Somehow the environment created the problem wherever they were.
Exactly. All of that craziness that people did. And that's, for a survivor, that's a big deal, because bishops, cardinals, whoever, saw the institution as being far more important than the abused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there is a lot of resentment, and you read about that.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And in a sense, I'm not a person who likes to continue fighting. Mm-hmm. So, all right. I didn't get treated so hot. I get to tell it. It's out there. But then it's gone. I don't have to like the person who treated me poorly. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to hang on to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I'm as much a member of the church as anybody else, you mm-hmm. and I, by mm-hmm. our baptism. Mm-hmm. And so you have a red hat. Who cares? you know, really, you can still do stupid things.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of those people who did some crazy things never were made to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, there was never a forum for people to explain what they were feeling, for the abuse to get together with those people, because everybody wanted it to go away. And I guess everybody thought it was going to go away. We'd reach a day when there were no more people to come forward and moving right along to the next thing.
Yeah. We purified the yes. institution, and now off we go.
Off we go. Yeah. And so that, you and I know that's never going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the people that made those mistakes. Some got fired, some retired, I don't know where they went.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are gone. And so we have new bishops, like our bishop, who says, well, we have to get together, we got to talk about this, and we're talking about hope and healing. He says it's too early for joy. Well, maybe not.
Yeah.
Hope and healing. So I don't think that someone's going to come into a mass or a prayer service and be instantly healed. It's just, it could happen, of course, but it's just not the way.
Not the norm.
No. But just by walking in, you begin the process of healing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our lives are very fragile, and, you know, we never know what might happen. So we have to work on it now. We have to begin. We have to start to overlook, to move beyond, to be better than. I don't want to be like the priest that was mean to me when I came forward. Why would I want to do that?
Mm.
I want to be the best me I can be, because I know God's going to ask me the question, are you the person I created you to be? So I can't blame anybody else. The man that abused me is dead. I don't think I hate him, but I don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
When he died, it was interesting. I went into the funeral home in the morning before the mass because my mother made me go to the mass. And I was the only one there. Mm-hmm. And I knelt down, you know, as you do at wakes, and I poked his arm a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know that he was really dead.
Really dead. Yeah.
Really dead.
Yeah.
And then somehow I could go on. That's not so important to me today. But mm-hmm. back then, at the very start of it all, that was important to me.
When we talk about this, especially clergy abuse, but almost so many, many times in abuse, you're dealing with a trusted person. In the, you know, could be family member, could be relative, could be, you know, coach, could be whomever, but someone who you do not suspect to be wishing to perform anything ill upon you or your loved one. How recognizing the abusers? I don't know. I mean, is there any way to recognize? And maybe the safe environments is teaching methods to recognize something or might go on.
I think one of the biggest things that safe environments teaches us is that in terms of, maybe not families, but in terms of schools and religious ed programs and all that, we don't leave one person alone with a group. There's always two adults. Those two adults, hopefully together, will be watchful of the kids.
So you're doing everything to remove the opportunity
That's
of a
right.
predator to have the possibility of doing something.
Well, you know, you read stories about kids who were in Catholic schools and they'd be in line to go to the, I don't know, to
Whatever.
Recess.
Yeah.
And the priest would come along and take him with him. Oh, I need him to do something for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Well, normally that person, the teacher was a nun.
Yeah.
He was a priest. Is she going to tell you, hey, forget it, kid.
It's good.
No, she's not going to say a word. Yeah. And even if she felt in her heart that it was bad, she couldn't do anything about it. So the people that are abusers are very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. If they could put their smarts to good use, it'd be a lot better world.
Yeah, it'd be genius.
Yes, they're very smart.
Yeah.
You know, picking out people, very few people at the time of the abuse came forward, like the day after it happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they picked their victims carefully. So might be a kid who's got troubles at home, might be a kid who, like myself, I come from a large family, kind of get lost in the rent. It could be any kind of person that is insecure, and somebody shows them some attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. But one thing I know, that when I was in high school, if he had offered me a beer or something, I never would have taken it. I mean, I'm not that stupid. Right. I know that I'm not supposed to be drinking beer when I'm 14 years old. So that would be... And if I went home and said that, because that's kind of a neutral thing, isn't it? It's not sex. It's, you know,
it's something that you said of like, gee, this is something wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't the right thing to do. And
right.
That's about it. But you don't think beyond.
No. That. Never, never, never. And, you know, why? I had a classmate in the seminary, and he became the chaplain of a high school. Okay, everything was going along fine. Then the kid had some troubles. And he would counsel the boy, but after school, and then where he lived.
Mm.
Well, I don't know about you, but Tom Guiney was a great priest, and I liked him a lot, but I wasn't staying overnight at the rectory.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It wouldn't make any sense. So for my classmate, that's how it all started, and he went to jail.
Mm.
And I tried to... I knew this guy real, real well. I knew his family. He knew my family. So I reached out to him. I tried to understand why he did what he did. All he could do was make excuses.
Yeah.
And so that was the end of our relationship. I couldn't. You know, it's not my job to help him figure out all the things he did wrong. So safe environments... is going to stay with us. Erin Neal, there'll be another Erin Neal when she's moved on. And I think that's a good thing. And, you know, pretty soon, it'll just be the regular thing. You know, we know it's new, but young people don't know it's new. And so as they move on to take their rightful places in parishes, part of the deal.
If we look at society in general, kids are being taught to be more suspicious and more aware of their environments than ever before. Is there a worry that we create a paranoia among children, though? Where does the thing of saying, hey, something's a little wrong here, versus, you know, everybody's out to get me kind of thing?
I'll tell you a funny story. There was a survey taken, and they asked kids in 3rd, 5th, and 7th grades about their sexual behavior. So the 3rd grade responses were what you'd expect.
Yeah.
What
are you talking about?
The 7th grade, that was more bravado. Especially the boys.
Yeah.
And then the 5th graders, it came back when they asked if you had ever had sex. The 5th graders, more than 50% said yes. And so they couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, it just, there had to be something wrong.
Yeah.
So they went into the classrooms and got the kids together and said, 50% of you said you had sex. Do you know what sex is? Oh, sure we do. Okay, what is it? Holding hands.
Yeah.
So nobody had helped them. They were wide open to sexual abuse because they had no idea what it was about.
Yeah.
They just didn't know.
Yeah.
So that we need to help kids understand sexuality. But we don't need to give a first grader a 19-year-old's information.
Yeah.
We need to help the first grader to understand on that level. And I used to run a religious ed program, and we, no matter what grade you were in or if you were an adult, everybody studied the same topic every Sunday, but on the level of it, they could understand it. So when they went home, hopefully they had conversations and all of that. So people get nervous when you start talking about sexuality because they don't always trust the teacher. Or unfortunately, we know, though, parents don't do it.
Mm.
More now. I mean, my parents never did anything, told me about sex. You know, I can't imagine what they would have said. Mm. And so when that happened to me, I wasn't quite sure what was happening. And we have to, as you said, not frighten children. You know, sex is a gift from God. Use it. Enjoy it. But we have to let people know that there are certain standards, certain boundaries. When I was in Hartford at the AIDS place, there was a group of ninth graders, and they would go and talk to every fifth grade in the city. And they were ninth graders, so not so much older than the fifth graders. And it was all about sexual boundaries. And the kids that were presenting were very well trained by people at Hartford Hospital. And the kids felt very free to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And so there was no more holding hands with sex. But they had the opportunity to giggle and to get it all out, you know.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing. And then to build on that. Mm-hmm. And they stayed with them then to sixth grade until the ninth graders graduated, and then another group would come in. It was a great program. I don't know if it still goes on today.
That I don't know either, but it sounds like, and certainly we need, especially in the culture today, there's a great awareness of sexual abuse, the great awareness of being aware of someone who might be sizing you up as a potential victim. You got that on one end, where there seems to be a strong moral sense of a meaning. We've got, and on the other end, you have the culture that turning sexuality into an amusement park ride,
mm-hmm.
where if you say no, you've got something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, does that kind of attitude encourage or give some kind of permission to someone who may have a tendency toward abuse to feel a little freer?
I think that anybody who, whether you're a youngster who's thinking about having sex, you know, a high school kid, or a perpetrator who'd like to have sex with a kid, they do much better in chaos.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of chaos these
mm-hmm.
days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you and I, we're just talking right here. We've been talking about sexuality, but let's, you know, if we expand that, we have homosexuality, we have transgender folks. Now all these things existed all the time,
right?
But now, it's right with us.
Yeah.
And so when your kid comes home from school and starts asking you about transgender people, you know, are you comfortable?
Mm.
What do you say? And so we have to let people find out. We can't be afraid. We hide so darn much. And in chaos, the bad people win.
Mm.
Absolutely all the time. And so the church is not always of the same belief as the people. So, you know, we only have to go back to the 70s with the issue of birth control.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people disagreed with the church and continue to today, but they also don't see it as a reason not to be part of the Catholic Church.
Right.
Right.
And conscience decision.
It's all over. We don't talk about it anymore. But there are other issues that the Catholic Church does make a game changer, and then you have to decide what you want to be. You know, cultures in other parts of the world, people begin having sex in their early teens and nobody thinks anything of it. And you and I have our notions. We think we know what's going on and what should not be going on. But we can do this radio show and we influence a certain number of people, but not enough.
Mm-hmm. When I think of a person who might be listening to this program, maybe had been abused, I guess what I'm saying, you are completely in credentialed to say, what do we do? What would you tell them wherever they are? Right now, they're just there and they haven't spoken about it.
Right.
What needs to be done?
The Office of Safe Environments gets lots of calls from people who don't give their names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they've never told anybody about their sexual abuse, but they'll talk to Erin and they tell her lots of things, maybe their first names. And all Erin can do is let them know that we want them. We want them to come in.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to use your last name, don't use your last name. Whatever it is that would make you comfortable. If somebody, I had a case when it came out that I was abused by the priest that I was, a man about 10 years younger than I was also abused by that priest.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me.
Mm-hmm.
And he had done nothing. He hadn't told anybody. Mm-hmm. And he just left Connecticut because he couldn't be around where it had happened.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't going to call me again. That was a one-shot deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I tried to get him to do is to find a buddy, a friend, or if you know a therapist, somebody that you trust, go to them and get it out of your system. Tell the story and then begin the process of healing.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to us. I wish it didn't happen to me, and I'm sure you wish it didn't happen to me.
How?
But it did, so we have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we tend to ruin our lives in many ways.
Well, we've had the great privilege today of speaking with Peter Philip here on Thoughts for the Week in the area of clergy sex abuse. But it, unfortunately, that kind of thing could happen in regard to people in any vocation. We've been given an opportunity for reaching out, and we would like to invite everyone to please feel free, if you want to learn more about the topic, to either go online, if you prefer, just go right to the website of the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut, probably anyone listening throughout the country or wherever you might be listening, seeing that we also are on the Internet, this program, that try to get in touch with church. See if they have an environment, see what they're doing in regard to it, and let's start making movement toward healing and the joy you talk about, a return to joy. With that hope, I want to wish everyone a very fine week ahead. Thank you for listening. God bless. Peter, thank you.
Thank you.